Wind Down with Jana Kramer, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
Which is your favorite holiday?
It is my favorite holiday.
What makes it your favorite holiday?
What makes it my favorite holiday? Well, it's actually kind of a sad thing. But as a kid, when my parents got divorced, well, when my parents were together, it was always Christmas was just crazy. Mm-hmm. We had to go to like so many different families. And then when my parents got divorced, it was one side of the family was never happy. So no matter how long we stayed there or didn't spend time, so it just became like pressure. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like having to be, I wish like our family got up together at the same time and we were together and but not having to go to this house and this house because my parents are divorced. And so that always just put a little damper of Christmas. But with Thanksgiving, even when my parents got divorced, Thanksgiving was always my Aunt Susie's house. And that never changed. And I love Thanksgiving because it was so much fun. It was my aunt and uncles and my grandpa. And my grandpa makes the best stuffing of all time,
which I am now pressured to make.
Well, almost last second decided to just go to Michigan because I'm like, my grandma and grandpa are both getting so old and it's his stuffing and my grandma's pumpkin pie for you. But then I realized, okay, God forbid we have something that we catch on the plane and we give to them. So mm-hmm. I hope they're around next year that we can, and this will all be we'll all be vaccinated or whatever, and we can go to, to have Thanksgiving with them again. But I don't know. Thanksgiving, there was just like no pressure, and it was just fun, and we played games, and we played euchre, and we had great food, and there was just no pressure of gifts or going from house to house. And I don't know. That's just, it was just chill. And the food. I mean, the stuffing. He's famous for it. And now you're stressing out a little bit. We went to the grocery store this morning. Mm-hmm. Are you worried? Because Grandpa came here 2 months ago and he sat down and he told you exactly how to make it.
It wasn't like exactly step by step. I had about five people. It was like your grandpa, then your mom, your grandma.
Make sure the bread is actually a stale bread.
Don't forget the onion.
Oh, Marge.
And then someone else saying, the poultry seasoning. And someone else saying something else. And I'm just like,
jotting
down chicken scratch. Couldn't even read my own handwriting this morning and looking back at it. But
and then my grandpa's like, and then you take the heart or the
giblets?
The giblets. And I'm like, what's the giblets? And he's like, that's the good stuff.
Yeah. Right. Like the liver and grind it up and put it in the pan with the onions. I don't know. We'll find out. So here's to hoping I don't ruin your Thanksgiving.
You won't ruin it. But there is something to be said about just his Thanksgiving. I mean, his stuffing. It's so good. Which, we forgot the gravy. I hope we have gravy. I'm going to have to text our friends. You have to have gravy. You have to have gravy.
I know. I feel like sometimes people don't have enough gravy.
And we have to have mashed potatoes. Oh, my goodness. I got to make sure that the menu's
up to par.
Yeah. But I'm excited, though, even though I'm sad that we're not going to be with family. But what is your favorite holiday?
It used to be Thanksgiving, kind of not for the same reason, but a little bit for the same reason. You know, my parents weren't the ones that got divorced, but my parents are the only ones on either side of the family that have never been divorced or married in general. So Thanksgiving was always my mom's side of the family. And that was like when my grandma was active and not suffering from dementia, and she was the most unbelievable cook, like everything from scratch. She would like cook it all herself. It was unreal. And you know, the parents are upstairs. She had a little split foyer house, and the kids' table was downstairs. And I just remember just the memories of Thanksgiving downstairs with me and my cousins and my sister, and you know, because there's six of us and we're all around the same age. Mm-hmm. So that was just a lot of fun. But now I think it's Christmas. And growing up, I think, you know, my family was an outlier where we got to benefit from just both families happen to do on different days. My dad's side was always Christmas Eve my mom's side was always Christmas Day. So there wasn't any pressure of, all right, we got to go to your dad's side of the family. Okay, we got to go here. That's just the way it was when I was a kid. So that was, you know, we benefited from that. But I just love to get getting together.
I definitely think Christmas now is my favorite because Thanksgiving's now my saddest because it's not like how it used to be. So I'm not with grandpa and grandma and my aunts and uncles and my mom and that side of the family. But now Christmas, so that's like become now like my sad memory, which is, I wish we could fly to Michigan. Dang you, COVID. Just because, you know, our grandparents are getting old. So, but now I think Christmas is my favorite just because of the kids.
Oh, so much fun.
And I'm excited to, you know. It's just, yeah, Christmas morning, it's the best. And then it's, like, the worst because it's, like, when it's all done, you're like, all right, we got.
Now what?
Putting batteries and everything. Oh, that's funny.
I love it, though. You know, tonight, I didn't know this. Easton and I were just talking about it before the show. But I didn't know until later in my life that tonight was, like, the biggest going out night of the year.
Really?
Yeah. It's like bigger than New Year's.
Yeah.
Bigger than all of
that. It's when all the, I mean, gosh, when I used to come back from LA, oh, I just thought I was hot. I would just walk into the Main Street Billiards in Rochester and was like, that's right, I'm back from LA. And like, you just see all your like high school, but I mean, it was packed.
It's like Sweet Home Alabama.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine. Oh, there's Jana. She lives in LA. Have you been on anything yet?
What?
Had you been on anything yet?
I mean, probably not. But I still thought LA was cool.
Well, yeah. I guess I never did. I never experienced it because I was always in football.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely remember. But that being the night before everyone went out. Because at any time I would go home for things. Because I never missed a Thanksgiving, even when I lived in LA. So, oh my God, I did miss one. Remember I told you that story?
What happened?
Eastwood.
Oh, yeah.
Not to bring up the past, I did miss one Thanksgiving. But it was kind of hard to say no to.
That's kind of hard to say no to. I'll even admit that.
Easton just goes, tell the story.
Producer Easton, I agree. Tell the story.
No, I don't want to bring up. I had to accurately speak the truth because I said I never missed a Thanksgiving, but then I just remembered the one that I did miss because of someone I was dating, but it was like, his dad. You know, I was like, that's pretty cool.
This was probably like the year before me, huh?
It was right after, I mean, yeah, it was
2013.
Yeah, I had just broken up with someone, and then I started dating this other dude.
Can I just say that who the dad was?
I mean...
Easton, show your face. This is actually your neck of the woods.
What do you mean your neck of? Oh, Montecito. We went to Montecito.
Who was it?
Wait, let's play a game. Let's do a guessing game. Ooh, this is fun.
Okay.
I don't know how to play the game though.
I don't know either.
So this person has a famous father. Is that
yes.
What we're getting?
Yes.
Okay, and they live in Montecito.
His father has a home in Montecito.
Okay.
Trying to think of something that
clever
won't give.
He's
it away.
A mule. He was a mule in a movie.
Okay.
He's played a mule. He's played a. I mean, I don't know all of his movies. I just like. Was he an outlaw?
Do you feel lucky?
What I was okay. That
from? Do ya? I punk.
What wow. Was that from?
Dirty Harry.
I never saw it.
Wait, I know who it is now, but is this person that you were with, is his son is an actor too, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think we all know who it is now.
That's all we'll give you.
They're not going to know that.
Yes, they
yes,
are.
Yes, they are.
Really?
Yes.
Everyone knows, do you feel lucky?
I didn't know it.
Do you?
I'm not going to lie. When you said he played a mule, I was like, Jana dated one of Eddie Murphy's kids?
What movie was that?
He was Donkey in the Shrek movies.
That's funny.
But a mule is not a donkey. They're different animals. That's not who it is.
Huh. I mean, I wouldn't know.
So anyways, Jana got the invite to go there for Thanksgiving instead of just her whole family that would always be there for her and grandpa stuffing. And she said, nope.
I would have done the same thing. I don't blame you.
I know. I mean, 99.100% of us would have done the same thing.
It was Clint Eastwood. Come on.
I mean, dang. She just throws it out there.
I mean, how could I say no? But I actually, it was so embarrassing because I made a fool of myself in front of him.
What'd you do?
Remember? At the... I told
No, I was in the bathroom when that happened at Thanksgiving dinner.
No, I told him how he should have ended Million Dollar Baby. Like, it was like, I think I was really nervous.
If it was me, I totally would have done it this
No,
way.
But I... No.
I got some to say to you, Clint.
No, it was so embarrassing because his son went to the bathroom. And I was just like, your son's a very nice guy. And he's like, huh? Because he's old. And I was like, your son is a very nice man. And then I just was so uncomfortable and I was like sweating. And I was like, okay, can I talk to you about something? And I was like, so in Million Dollar Baby, when Hilary Swank, it was the last scene and they were going at it, the ref said, one more cheap shot and you're disqualified. And at the very end, her opponent cheap shot it again. So she should have then been disqualified, which would have meant Hilary Swank won, not the other girl, because he gave the championship to the other girl. Even though the ref said one more cheap shot, they get eliminated. And he gave me like just a stare and went, huh. And I was just like, I'm going to bury my head in this bowl.
I'm so disappointed in you, and I didn't even know you then. So disappointed.
But do you see what I'm saying, though? Like, the ref said.
That's too predictable. You're talking to the guy who wrote the damn thing, directed the damn thing, starred in the damn thing.
I was nervous, and I was trying to make conversation.
Straight up triple crowned that movie. Didn't it win, like, Best Picture also?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, hey, you know what you could have done on that Best Picture Oscar? Huh?
I'm crying right now. This is the funniest thing I've ever heard, Jana.
He should have gotten up, walked over to wherever his Oscar is, grabbed it, and put it on the table in front of Jana. Been like,
I'm just saying, the ref said one more cheap shot and you're eliminated. And the girl cheap shotted Hillary, which then took her out. So the Hillary should have won.
Here's what people need to know about Jana when she watches things. If it doesn't end the way she wants it to end,
it's the rules. The ref said.
It's over. She writes it off.
I'm just saying.
That movie was terrible. Didn't end the way I want. Why didn't they end up together? Why didn't Clint Eastwood and Hilary Swank have a baby? Like, what? Everyone should be happy.
Oh, Lord.
You're like sweating right now, reliving it.
It's because the ref said. And so it's like, I'd have been fine if the ref didn't say that. Like, he should have at least cut that line.
I'm gonna wake up in the middle of the night, like later in the week, and just start crying. Like, wait, Jana told Clint Eastwood how Million Dollar Baby should have ended. I can't believe it. He won Best Director for that movie too. He has two Oscars.
Yeah, I know. Well, me and the son broke up like the day after, so maybe his dad told him to break up with me.
Most likely.
Oh, like, man.
All right, Dad. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back to this or something else.
Something else, please. Okay, so we have a really exciting guest that we're going to have on the show. Mike's going to intro her in a second, but we basically wanted to have someone on because, look, tomorrow's Thanksgiving. You guys might be getting together with your family, you might not, but there might be some fighting, arguing with the pandemic and the stress of just everything.
Politics
and just everything that everyone's facing right now. Because I do know this, like my anxiety has been up just with the cases rising. So, you know, it kind of freaks me out work-wise and obviously just the overall uncertainty. So we have Ryan Haddon coming on. Mike, take it away.
Yeah, we have an amazingly accomplished woman on today. Ryan is a certified life and spiritual coach. She's a hypnotherapist, certified meditation teacher with over 16 years of experience with clients around the world. She does private workshops such as Stepping Into Your Purpose, The Work-Life Balance, and Finding Your Center. And before all of that, she was in a volatile relationship with Christian Slater, and she's helped a ton of people in Hollywood kind of, you know, rid themselves of the life that that can consume you, and helping people that are in toxic relationships that have, you know, suffered from drug and alcohol abuse, eating disorders, codependency, low self-esteem, all that. So we're going to get her on and just talk everything that she does.
I love it.
Ryan?
Hey.
Hey, Ryan.
How are you?
How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
It's so good to see you.
Good to see you too.
Ryan, we're excited to have you on. You know, everything that we've been reading about you are things that we talk about on this show. And it seems like you're kind of a jack of all trades in the sense of just everything that you cover. And so give our listeners, you know, we kind of gave them a little bit of background, but can you explain to us like how you got into all these fields that you're into?
Sure. Well, first off, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And I love what you guys are all about, too.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And thanks for making this platform. It's important for people to get information about how to, you know, move into a relationship with themselves. And we think it's about having relationships with others, but it's ultimately, how are we showing up for ourselves within that relationship? And everyone benefits. So thank you for talking about those things. And for me, my journey is that I found most of my life, I was looking for that solution outside of myself, be it in trying to bend my body to a certain weight or finding that perfect relationship out there that doesn't exist, or in turn, you know, chasing the shiny things and people, places and things and all of that. And then ultimately leading it to a very real and present bottom in addiction. And so in that recovery process, that's almost 17 years ago, I found that I really loved working with other women and helping them sort of put those pieces together for themselves and really lean into themselves and truly finding that from that place, everything else kind of worked out, you know, all the purpose, the passion, the relationship, the making peace with your body, all those different elements.
Do you only work with women?
I don't. I work with men too now, but it started out working with women, and I do work with men. Actually, that's just opening up, and it's very, very interesting. I have this flood of men that I'm working with these days, and I love it. We got to balance the both sides, right? The feminine, the masculine within ourselves. So of course that would come through my practice.
So before you got in, again, we introduced you, kind of gave them a background of what you do for a living now. And before you got into the spiritual and life coaching and hypnotherapy and everything like that, when you hit your bottom, like you said, was about 17 years ago, what were you doing before that? And why was that moment, you know, that moment of clarity for you?
Mm. You know what? I had been a seeker, if you will. It had led me at 17 to run off to India and live in a, you know, make a pilgrimage to a sacred site and live there for many years. And so I had been a seeker. I had been looking for that alignment, if you will, at an earlier age. And I did find a connection with something greater that has really carried me through dark days. It didn't preclude me from having them, but that connection, I want to say that grace shortened the distance between, you know, the dark night of the soul and stepping back into feeling in the sunlight of the spirit, if you will. So I do feel like because I had that at 17 and I had been a seeker, I was able to continue to grow out my spiritual path and yet be this courageous person trying out all these other things, still looking outside of myself for solutions until I finally came to that resting place 17 years ago. I was like, I'm done. I'm done seeking. I'm done thinking it's somewhere else. It's in that relationship. And, you know, at that time I was married, and that relationship a year or so later didn't hold, but it continued in another form because we were co-parenting. We had two small children. And so that's that part. So I will say I have always been looking and trying to, through therapy, through all these different paths of trying to find that center within myself. And I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know that was what I was seeking, but it definitely picked up more urgency with that addiction piece, I will say. So I'm grateful for it.
I'm sure. Along with that, you know, being a person in recovery myself, you know, you come across mm-hmm. brothers and sisters that have a difficult time leaning into the spirituality of program or spirituality in life in general. So as a spiritual and life coach, I make up that you've come across clients that, that have, you know, closed doors to their spirituality. How are you able to, maybe for our listeners, if there's someone out there that has a hard time connecting with that spirituality, how do you invite that when you have a client like that?
I think we can redefine it. I think it's about broadening that definition of spirituality. I mean, what could that be? What's something greater than you? You know, it could just be the idea of love. It could be nature. Mm. It could be something that feels bigger than the ego, bigger than the personality. And that might even be that Godhead within yourself, or that connection when you look at your child and feel that that love that's obviously much that transcends, you know, the finite part of our humanity. You feel that, that greatness. So I think I would talk to them about redefining what spirituality looks like. And it's not the crystals and the singing bowls and, you know, going to church. And it's not, it doesn't have to be all of that. It can be much more simple and much more connected. And I love that beautiful adage of, you know, something greater can be closer than our hands and feet, right? Mm. And so that's within us. So how can we have access to that within our own selves? And I think everybody wants that, because we all are enslaved to a certain part to our minds and our thoughts. You know, we have 80,000 thoughts a day, most of which are unconscious. So to be able to drop past that into that part of us that's calm and peaceful, that can be your something greater. Mm-hmm. We can access that through lots of different modalities, meditation being one of them.
Man, I love that.
What, with hypnotherapy, is that kind of like an EMDR brain spotting, or is it completely different? Because I make up that like it has the same reaction, mm-hmm. but is it, or is it totally different?
Well, I can't speak to that because I don't practice that. I know it's way effective, and I think it's something that you practice too. Is that right?
So with hypnotherapy though, how is like what's the process with that? Like what are people getting hypnotized for? Because I've only heard of hypnotization when it's to quit smoking or mm-hmm. I don't know what else can you be hypnotized for?
Sure. Well, it's let's just say this, that trance is a natural state for us. So I love to start out by talking about that we're in trance more often than we know. We're in trance when we're driving a car from A to B and we don't know how we got to B, where that was a form of trance, right? Or when we're reading a book or we're watching a movie, it's really moving into this focused state of awareness. And then you have these brainwave activity levels. Like right now we're in beta. Below that is alpha, and you can kind of dip into that in meditation or when you're, you know, doing something to the exclusion of other things. And then below that is theta. So when we're in hypnosis, it would be like a guided meditation. A hypnotherapist would guide you into this very relaxed state of mind and body. And that is when, in that theta state, that is when the subconscious is most receptive to new ideas and new ways of being. So that's where we find people do great with quitting smoking or nail biting or any of those, but it also works great for old ideas around love, ideas around success, abundance, security. So we find those are where all those ideas are stored, because the subconscious mind houses every memory you've ever had, any emotion you've ever had, and your imagination. So that's where we tap into that part of you that really keeps a record of anything that's ever happened in the past. And we might've picked up ideas around things that actually aren't for our highest benefit. Mm-hmm. So it's really getting the conscious mind and the subconscious mind on board. And that's how hypnosis works.
That's cool.
Is that something in your practice that, you know, the hypnotherapy or meditation, do you eventually try to get each of your patients or clients kind of on a path of that, or is it kind of specific to that person, whether or not you think they could get to that level of spirituality or whatever it may be?
You know, different people come to me for different things, and most people have a healthy fear of hypnosis because they think they're going to be made a fool of in some way, or they're going to be acting, you know, outside of their bounds of you know, their high ground, if you will. So it's really just knowing that a hypnotherapist can't make you do anything you don't want to. And it's really what's in line with your moral compass. So that's one way to look at it. And so I feel like I don't really have to, I think we build a rapport with someone and then they come to trust and they know your voice and they know you're, you know, listening to how they are. You have that connection. And then from that point, then they might be willing to try hypnosis or something else, I think. So people come for different reasons. Some people come directly and just say, I want to do hypnosis. I know this works. I've heard it works. I know it's effective. And then other people start out through the coaching path and then they come to find, they realize they're hitting these same blocks over and over. Because consciously, if you realize you're doing the same thing, it's sometimes not, self-knowledge is not always enough, mm-hmm. right? To actually make that change. You can know, oh, I do this, I do that. I get triggered when this happens. When you say this happens, but you can't quite get past that. So what is that? Usually that's some idea that's in that subconscious part of yourself. And sort of we sift through that together. It's a, you know, it's a partnership.
So I know, and I want to be sensitive to this just because, it is your past and you have kids with your ex. How did you heal through the pain of things that went on in your relationship, your past relationship? Like, what was the thing that helped you heal? Because I know we have so many people that are in bad relationships, mm-hmm. toxic relationships. What was the breaking point to be like, I deserve better? Or, and then also, how did you heal from within?
Well, I stopped making him the bad guy. Mm-hmm. Right. And then I had to give up my victim card. Mm-hmm. And so those are a couple things of taking absolute responsibility for my own emotional life and my past and my triggers and just showing up in that capacity. I'm so grateful that we had a good shot at trying to do that. And I was able to bring these new tools into that marriage. And then there's also that moment where you say that we've gone as far as we can. And I love that when relationships can end with consciousness, with awareness, with still with love, bringing that to it and saying, you know, with all the tools I'm working with, everything, with me taking absolute responsibility for myself, it's become clear to me that this partnership isn't for the highest good. And I want the best for you. And I want this to continue. And it will continue in a different form. Certainly when you have children, it does continue. But that level of awareness, I'm so grateful mm-hmm. for. And it doesn't end in drama and in chaos, which I brought plenty of to that marriage. So grateful that I had another way of closing it up, if you will.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talking on that makes me think of a topic that you talk about in some of your stuff, which is radical self-acceptance. And that concept is so intriguing to me. And I'd love for you to kind of give your insight on what that means.
Well, I think we've touched on it a tiny bit, and it's, you know, radical acceptance is a dialectical behavior therapy term. So I want to give honor that, where it came from. And then the self-acceptance part is always going to be good. But let's first cover the radical acceptance is about accepting things as they are, you know, not necessarily condoning them, not that you don't want them to be different, not saying this is the way I want it to be, just saying it is what it is. And a lot of times we get stuck as humans and we get into that spinning our wheels. It shouldn't be this way. It should be different. They should be doing this. I should have got that job. It's like all of that spinning of the wheels. And we can just move into that radical acceptance and acknowledging this is how it is for right now. And when I accept all my feelings underneath that, all that goes with it, when I honor all of that, then I can come up with another solution and it can be different. I think it's just an important step when we're in, you know, that fight and flight mode, or we're in that victim mode of it shouldn't have happened this way. It shouldn't be this way. It doesn't mean I agree with it. It just means I accept it. Mm-hmm. And so that goes true for self-acceptance. I am doing this behavior again. There it is, you know, bringing that curiosity to it. Oh, wow, there's that behavior. I think a lot of times we have these images of how we think we should be and then how we actually really are. And so that's, you know, there's a lot of pain that happens in that closing that gap. And so when we can move into that space of owning all our parts, all that part that we stuff into the shadow, you know, the part in our basement that we disown, all those parts of ourselves. And we wear these masks to hide behind so we don't have to own those other parts. When we can move into radical self-acceptance and say, I accept all parts of myself, it's assuming total responsibility, then we heal. Then we integrate, then we show up in full partnership and not expecting our partner to deliver us things that we're unwilling to do the work to deliver ourselves.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. What would you say to the people right now, because there's so much uncertainty with a lot of things, with the virus, everything happening in the world right now. What would you say to the soul that is anxious and I'm just curious, like how do you help with that anxious soul during these times?
I say, I feel you. I hear you. We're all in this together, right? This is one of those moments where I know there's some division, but at the end of the day, we're all humans with beating hearts that want to know love and security, and we want to feel connectivity. And it is that moment in time to highlight that in your life, in your space. Make sure you curate, you know, who you spend time with. It really helps. It really creates your reality. Watch what you're thinking. Watch how you err to, you know, you slide into that negative perspective. I think where you can curate that positivity in your life, not in that Pollyanna kind of way, but really looking for the good. We're, you know, in different holidays at this period of time, this would be a time to really count your blessings, to look at how this year has changed you, because it has changed people either kicking and screaming or voluntarily. We've had to reprioritize. We've had to, solidify certain things in our lives that maybe things got big and expanded, and we've had to pull that in and create our core group, our core circle. And also, you know, developing that relationship with yourself. I mean, here's the thing. There is no security out there, right? I say this often, and it can seem shocking, but we're under the illusion that this world is a place where we can put anchors and tethers in. You know, we have this idea in partnership, like you complete me. You know, that our children are extensions of ourselves, that when I get that bank account, I'll be safe. When I have that job, I'll be okay. But this is a period of time where kind of a lot of those things are dissolving, and we're moving into pulling in things really tight. And what am I in partnership with truly? I'm in partnership with me. I'm in partnership with myself. I'm the constant. Kids grow up. Husbands can come and go. You know, you guys are still in it. And blessings to you. Much love, because there's great work to be done. You know, in partnership, it's really the masterclass, where if you're conscious and you're holding up the mirror to each other lovingly, that you can really evolve and walk through this in a beautiful way together. So partnership is beautiful and powerful. Certainly it has so much grace to it. It can. Mm-hmm. And then when we're unconscious, we're just like bumping into each other and triggering each other all over the place. And we think, oh, maybe somewhere else I'll get my solution. Right. But I think people are realizing that now, that this is a time to really check your thinking, check your world, check your space. How connected are you? What is true for you now?
Mm-hmm. Man, that's like the perfect message for what we need right now, with Thanksgiving tomorrow and then with the political climate that we're dealing mm-hmm. with these days. I mean, nothing more than just, and sometimes I feel like people get away from it being that simple. Right? We're just human beings all looking for the same thing, and we don't have to overreact to everyone else's opinions or expressions or whatever. I know I'm guilty of that at times, but I love it. Jana's like, yeah, you do. Well, Ryan, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much for spending this time with us and kind of sharing your wisdom with ourselves and our listeners, you know, especially before this holiday season.
And if you want to know more, definitely go to RyanHaddon.com. It's RyanHaddon.com. She's got a 6-week relationship course and a few other courses too, and private workshops like stepping into your purpose, the work-life balance, and finding your center. We visited your website last night, and it was just I was immediately just like, I felt zen, and I was like, I need to take everything on this page. But just thank you for putting that energy out into the world, because we need more people like you. So thank you.
Thanks for having me, you guys.
Of course.
All right. Bye, Ryan. So have a great holiday.
I mean, I think we all need, it's something that we kind of talked about in, or our pastor was talking about in church, like everyone should have like a mentor, mm-hmm. just someone that has that energy that can, not saying she's a mentor, but I mean, she could be for someone, but just having that life coach or that mentor.
That puts things back into perspective.
Yeah, that puts things, but also can help you kind of not freak out or not stress out or just see the, you see the light when there's a lot of darkness. So.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely has that therapy tone of voice. Yeah. I mean, that'll just lull you to sleep in a good way of like just kind of calming your nerves.
Yeah.
Like calming your heartbeat. Like everything I felt was just like calm and just relaxed. And so, I mean, she was talking about some amazing messages. So definitely go check out her website, or her Instagram is Ryan Haddon Coach on mm-hmm. Instagram. So go check that out. But let's finish up with an email and call it a holiday.
This is an interesting email because we deal with this a little bit. It's from Anonymous. I wanted to know how you and Mike handle each other's friends when you don't like them or their spouse. In my case, my husband's best friend's wife hates me and always manages to talk trash either directly to me or to others about me.
Damn, directly to her.
Yeah. What is your breaking point with friends and friend spouses? At what point in the disrespect of your spouse do you cut both people out of your lives? Well, I'll first off say, if there was someone that was talking trash, like if one of my friends was talking crap about you, A, to your face or behind your back, like I would have your back and I'd be like, I would cut them out. And I would pray that if one of your friends
1,000%
talked crap about me, you would, you know, oh, which you kind of did to your one friend. He had said something.
When? Years ago?
No, this happened in January when you... when we got caught, that stuff. So, and you kind of clap back at to them. But I'm like, I would just hope that you would do the same thing.
100%.
But it's interesting because we do have situations where there's someone in Mike's circle that I do not like. I mean, like, I do not like him at all. But he's one of Mike's good friends. Mm-hmm. And what we've done is we just don't hang out as a couple anymore.
Right.
Because, and there's someone that you don't like in one of my circles. You know.
Who? It's not really in your circle.
I'm just saying it's still a friend. That you, see, this is, that's so, it just proves my point. And because that one guy that you, I mean, it's not really, I mean, he's one of the circles, but I mean, that's one of my circle groups.
Right.
And he, you know, so I don't really talk about the person in front of him, and he doesn't really talk about the other person in front of me, because I just can't stop when he brings that, because it just, ugh, it's hard. But I will say that it's very hard to find a couple that you like both parties.
Yeah.
Like there's a couple dudes in his circle. The dudes are awesome and the wives are. And then there's other side where the wives are awesome and the dudes are.
Yeah. Man, percentage-wise, do you think it's more guys are cool?
I see what you're doing there. No, I think it's just that just happened to be in that. No, no. Mm-mm.
I think in our case it is.
No, because there's only one dude I like out of that group now.
You don't even know the other ones.
Yes, I do.
Well enough. No,
but
here's the thing. From this email standpoint, yeah, like Jane was saying, if they're talking then, like, if any of my friends are talking shit, I'd be like, I'll call them out and say, if you continue to do that, peace. Like, I'll choose my wife.
That's right.
So, but the thing is like, none of my close friends would do that.
Right. So you almost have to wonder in this case, like, why your husband's. Well, here's the thing. It's his best friend's wife. His best friend. So just imagine. If one of your best friends, mm-hmm. let's say, like, who's your best friend?
I don't have one, but say Al.
Well, you were going to say the one because the wife doesn't like me. But she would, so his wife isn't like a huge fan of mine and one of Mike's best friends.
Different friend, yeah.
But so, yeah, we had a little thing and she doesn't like me and that's okay. It's fine. It's fine. We're not besties. It's all good. But if she were to say something directly to me or to Mike, like that's so wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't be friends with this person.
No.
Like you wouldn't stop. I'm sorry. You wouldn't stop being friends with this person.
If the wife was saying, I would be more
distant. In my case, my husband's best friend's wife hates me and always manages to talk trash either directly to me or to others about me. So you know darn well that this dude's wife is going to say bad things about me.
Look, if I was...
Because we know she has, because that's how we found out about things.
Yeah, but here's the thing. He did his best at telling his wife to stop with that. And he was kind of playing Switzerland a little bit because he was caught in between a rock and a hard place. But it's not like it's an ongoing thing now. If it still was, then there'd be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So I would tell, like with this guy, I would tell, you know, your husband, Anonymous, he needs to tell his best friend, be like, yo, your wife needs to cut this shit out.
Or it's going to affect our relationship.
100%.
Yeah.
Because it would affect mine with my friends.
And it did kind of for a second.
It did. Absolutely, yeah. It did.
Which was a bummer because I'm like, I didn't mean to, you know, and I tried to apologize and.
No, I know. You handled it. Like a big person, but like a big girl.
I handled it like a big girl.
But no, I mean, I think, you know, that is tough. But, you know, outside of this specific situation, when it comes down to it,
mm-hmm.
we're still allowed to be friends with who we want to be friends with, as long as it's not, you know, harming the relationship. Right. Me still being friends with my one friend that you don't like doesn't harm our relationship.
No.
You know what I mean? So it's just one of those things.
You guys... We hope all of you have a very safe, healthy, happy Thanksgiving, however you spend it. We know a lot of you aren't able to be with your loved ones this Thanksgiving. We hear you. We see you. You're not alone. And
if you're breathing, if you're listening to this, be thankful that you are. And just find, you know, solace in those little things like that.
And if you get lonely, you're not alone. Call a friend. Pet your cat. Take your dog for a walk. You know, you're not alone.
You're saying if you're lonely, you have a cat, probably?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, I'm sure you have a pet.
Go pet your goldfish.
And if you're all alone, DM me, and we'll DM each other, because I don't want you to be alone.
Go pet your cat.
I didn't mean to. That did sound bad. I'm sorry. No, I apologize.
That's great. We need to end on that. Go pet your cat. See y'all next week.
Happy Thanksgiving, y'all. I'm sorry.